Welcome to Conversations with Creative Waco, the show that brings you the stories and voices shaping the creative landscape of Central Texas. I'm your host, Fiona Bond. This episode is all about the power of collaborative creativity. What happens when artists, students, neighborhoods, educators, and communities come together to build something larger than themselves? From an invitation to a mural battle to a deeply moving interdisciplinary art installation, exploring immigration, detention, and belonging, today's conversations remind us that the meaning of art goes beyond what you first see, and how and why it is created really matters. In our first half, I'll be joined by Stephen Huey, director of Creative Waco's Art Apprenticeship Program, to celebrate the completion of the spectacular Bridges and Brazos pavement mural at 7th Street Plaza, and to preview this summer's restoration of the beloved Brookview Hills mural, with multiple opportunities for community engagement. Then in our second half, I'll be speaking with Sarah Mosher, Associate Professor of Costume Design and Technology at Baylor University, about Belonging, an extraordinary collaborative fiber and data art project examining the impact of immigration detention in McLennan County. My first guest is someone who has spent years helping young artists discover not only their talent, but their voice and place within the community. Stephen Huey is director of Creative Waco's Art Apprenticeship Program, an award-winning initiative that pairs talented high school artists with professional mentors and creating ambitious public art projects while developing their real-world creative skills and expanding their professional horizons. He and his wife Heidi came to Waco from New York in 2024, where he served as a teaching artist, project manager, and then mural program director for Thrive Collective, which brings arts and mentoring opportunities around public schools in New York City. Last year's art apprenticeship program, under Stephen's leadership, brought a joyful and imaginative project that transformed 7th Street Plaza into a giant playable board game painted directly onto the pavement in the heart of downtown Waco. Now that construction work on the site is complete and furniture is in, it is open to the public and will become a hub for more art and creative programming. Now Stephen has just onboarded this year's apprentices and mentors and will be turning his attention to a brand new project. Stephen, welcome back to Conversations with Creative Waco.
Thank you.
It's great to have you here, both in Waco and in the studio.
Yeah, good to be here.
Stephen, remind us a bit about your own journey into art, because I think that really helps us understand why programs that prioritize mentorship and opportunities for young artists are important to you.
Yeah, for me, I didn't take any art classes growing up. There wasn't really art programming. Family didn't have a lot of finances growing up. So for me, I was always creative, but didn't really have the opportunities to learn in a more official way. That came much later when I was 20 and had moved to New York City and was very fortunate to be connected to a nonprofit that was doing murals in public schools, and the creative director at the time, he just needed help, the nonprofit struggle. And
you always need help.
Yeah. So when he realized I was creative and interested in it, he took me under his wing and taught me a lot of what I know, and then just kind of continue to learn from the other artists I was around. So for me, those programs were great because we were in schools that didn't have art programming, which is very similar to how I grew up. And then here, it's great because there's a lot of schools that do have art programming. So we get to bring in students who are very talented. They are learning art in school. They are curious about pursuing that in some professional capacity in the future. And we get to try and make that process a little bit less ambiguous to them and help encourage them, like, hey, this is possible. You just have to pursue it. Here's some things to avoid, some things to do. And it's a really great experience.
Do you think you would have become a professional artist if you hadn't encountered that program?
No, definitely not. Even the first time he asked me if I could see myself being a mural artist, I laughed in his face.
And look at you now.
Yeah, I was like, that's the sickest job in the world. I'd love to do that. I'm not an artist. And he was like, well, like, you have the people skills down and I can teach you art. It's not that hard. And now here I am. It's been the majority of the work that I've done for the last 10 years and get to do murals with friends and do my own murals and lead this program now here in Waco. So it's really interesting how life turns out.
Sometimes it takes those unexpected paths, but I think who better to be inspiring the next generation than somebody with your story? The 7th Street Plaza project was huge and ambitious and has delivered a really spectacular space for downtown. Thank you so much for bringing that complex vision to reality in a way that our whole community can enjoy. Tell us about this year's project. It's very different. I believe it's the first restoration of a mural that has taken place, certainly through the Art Apprenticeship Program.
Yeah, this year's project is going to be a lot of fun. First of all, it's a wall and not on pavement. Way easier to work on.
That will be, yes. Easier on your knees for sure.
Yeah. But yeah, it's a restoration project. It's a project that Mick Burson did back in 2014. And it's really fun because we get to teach the interns so much about what it means to be an artist through this project. Because this is a time where murals weren't necessarily super popular in Waco yet. And he was just trying to get out there and be creating art. So he went in with a pencil sketch and was like, hey, can I paint this on your wall? and he just kind of used whatever materials he had access to. And it was done in 2014. It's showing some wear and tear now, some sun damage, some weather damage. And we get to go in and bring new life to it because the community really wanted it. The developers developing the space, they wanted to keep it. Mick's going to be coming out to work with us on the project. So we're very excited about it. Get to talk about those beginning stages of being an artist when you're really hungry and there's not really money in it.
I'm guessing he was not paid for it originally.
I don't believe so. I would have to ask him. But I'd say based on using just whatever materials you have, probably not a lot of budget there. Maybe some lunches, hopefully. but that's kind of how being a mural artist is in the beginning. And those moments, they teach you a lot to you about the process, and it really checks you and makes sure that it's what you really want to do. I definitely had those times, like even though I was super fortunate to fall into this like weird situation in New York, the first year I was officially being paid to be a teaching artist, I was making like $300 a week.
Oh, wow.
Which is does not go very far in New York City.
That's basically two lunches.
Yeah. So we get to show them what the process is of, you know, this is what happens to a mural when you're using materials like that. But now we have a proper budget to restore this thing and give it new life. So what does the process look like on the material side of things, and what does that process look like, and how do you engage with the community while working on the mural? So it's gonna be a lot of fun.
I'm excited to see Mick again too, because he's now living and working in California. He's gone a long way from the days of scrabbling around with interior paint for exterior murals, and has himself become quite renowned in the mural painting world.
He's such a rad dude. I was aware of him. I've only been in Waco 2 years, but I was aware of him because people talk about him. And so I'm really excited to get to partner with him on this. We've gotten to interact a little bit in person and through emails and text messages, and we're both just super stoked about this year's program.
I love it. I'm excited to see what the two of you get up to together. Art Apprenticeship has become such a powerful model for workforce development and mentorship through the arts. What are students learning when they participate in the program, and how many have you got this year?
This year we have 20 interns, I believe from 8 or 9 different schools. We had 46 applicants, which was a big jump from last year. But we really, like when you come into the program, you're learning life skills too. Like, there's a lot of similarities between working on a mural in this collaborative space and just life in general. So we try and take those moments to pause and point those out to people and be very intentional about that. But we have a really awesome curriculum where we talk about the professional side of what it takes to engage with a client. How do you do invoices? How do you do site assessments and things like that? And then we dive into actual techniques too within art, but we really try and harp on clear communication, professionalism, showing up early, ready to work, and the importance of just being willing to leave a mark on other people and allowing other people to leave a mark on you. So it's a really great time. We have a really insanely talented cohort this year. Some of the mentors the first night were like, oh my gosh, this work is incredible that they're doing. I was like, I know, I'm excited. It's going to be great. So I'm really excited to see what comes from it, especially during the studio portion when they're working on their personal pieces. So,
well, that's a really good segue into, they are not just painting murals, correct? Mm-hmm. And so what are the opportunities that they have that are public facing that people who are listening to this might be able to engage with? How can people come and see them, see their work, support, encourage, all of those good things? Yeah.
Mural production is going to be between May 28th and June 5th. So if you're driving by, stop by, encourage the interns while they're working on it.
And we should probably say where it is, because this is 1401 North 34th Street, which is kind of tucked behind Bosque mm-hmm. Boulevard, but very easy to find.
Yeah, very easy to find. We will have the Community Paint Day on May 30th. There's going to be info going out about that and how to sign up. If you want to paint on the wall, you have to sign up. If you want to just come enjoy the vibes and the atmosphere and see the work being done, then you don't have to sign up.
You can just show up.
And then we'll have the ribbon cutting on June 6th, as long as there's no weather delays during production. And then we will have the mural battle at Brotherwell on June 20th. Which will be a really fun event because we partner with Eastside Market. So there's vendors and food trucks and things like that while the interns battle it out with their own designs that they came up with from start to finish. And then we'll have the exhibition at Washington Gallery on August 15th in the evening. It's a Saturday. So that's a really great opportunity to come out and just see the work and get to know the interns and hear their stories. I prefer people to hear their stories because it's all about them and their development. These are like the future artists of Waco. Or if they leave Waco, they're going to be like, oh yeah, I started in Waco. Mm. So go out, support them, encourage them. If you are wanting to donate to the program, there's ways to do that on the website. Especially right now, we can use some funding for breakfast and snacks. That's a great way to be involved, too.
And people could either bring those or could fund, I think, things like coupons for breakfast and that kind of thing are very welcome because that's a lot of people to feed every morning. Fantastic. Stephen, we are so grateful for you and so grateful for that program and the way that you are inspiring the next generation of artists. Thank you for continuing to prove that public art can build not just beautiful spaces, but confident young leaders and stronger communities. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
The Art Apprenticeship Community Paint Day for the Brookview Hills Mural Restoration takes place May 30th, followed by a ribbon cutting on June 6th, a mural battle on June 20th, and a student exhibition at the Washington Gallery on August 15th. My next guest is helping lead a remarkable project that sits at the intersection of art, data, storytelling, and social engagement. Sarah Moja is Associate Professor of Costume Design and Technology at Baylor University. Her work regularly bridges disciplines connecting theater, sustainability, environmental humanities, design, and community-engaged learning. She's also a leader in innovative collaborative practice, helping students connect creative work with real-world questions and experiences. Sarah has recently shepherded a powerful interdisciplinary project titled Belonging, a collaborative installation created by students from data science, theater arts, and Baylor's Department of Art and Art History. The project examines the impact of immigration detention in Waco and McLennan County through fiber art and data visualization and even sound. It was recently exhibited at the Bledsoe Miller Steam Center before it travels onward to Washington, D.C. Sarah, welcome to Conversations with Creative Waco.
Thank you so much, Fiona. I really appreciate you inviting us here today to talk about this project.
Before we jump into the project, tell us a little bit about yourself as an artist. I think you have one of the most creative job titles I've ever seen or heard. How did you get started in the world of costume design intersecting with technology?
I spent a lot of my time in theater and did that ever since I was pretty young. I also had some mentors in that field who saw potential for aspects of design within my work and shepherded me through that process. But really, I find that costume design ends up just being a medium that I use to explore story and explore the ways in which humans interact and societies interact. And I've always been interested in those larger questions and larger pictures. And it just worked out for me that I had the skills and the training to be able to use costume design as a method to do that.
So it's kind of an immersive art form for you and the people that you're creating with. And I love the interactive, I guess inherently it's interactive because when you're creating costumes for productions or in collaboration with others, you're having to kind of think through some of those problem solves and connectivity between the disciplines.
That's exactly right. And the theater is something that really does such a great job of engaging with the question of collaboration and how do we work together and how do we work under immense stress and how do we ask big questions.
There are hard deadlines there.
Very hard deadlines, which I really appreciate. But I think that on the whole, this idea of collaboration has always been something that's really valuable to me. And it's always a bit of a struggle. But I believe very firmly that you can't have good collaboration if there's not a little bit of conflict, because we are all different people, which means we all have different approaches. And so we need to be able to share those differences throughout the process and struggle together to reach a common goal.
I feel like you need to speak to some of our politicians, but it is, that's exactly right. That's how we as humans get better tomorrow than we were yesterday.
Yeah.
Well, belonging is such a great example of that. It's a really unusual and compelling combination of disciplines. How did that project come about? Because even the conversations, even opening those conversations between different disciplines within a university context can be just logistically tricky.
It really can be. It's all set up to really run in individual sort of siloed departments. So one of the biggest things that I was interested in when I came to Baylor was doing interdisciplinary work, because I've done it before and because theater requires it. But really, this particular project is sort of the second iteration of a partnership between myself and Dr. Rachel Wilkerson and Tina Linville, who's a professor in art, specifically in fiber arts. And we got together last year under the guidance of Sarah Schnicker, who gave us a really wonderful data set that came out of a study. And it really wanted some publication. And we wanted to do something with fiber arts and do data visualization. And so she brought us together, and we really took off with that project. And we involved students in that project as well. And that really began a larger collaboration.
So tell me about the actual data that is being worked with in this piece. What is it that we're seeing when we are seeing this final artwork and hearing and experiencing and touching this artwork? What's at the heart of it, and what do we discover as we see that piece?
So the data at the heart of this particular piece is data that came from the curiosity of the students that we were working with. We came out of a class called Art of Civic Practice, and the students were able to interact with a Colombian data scientist that we brought up, who works at the intersection of data and public discourse, and having difficult conversations by collecting data and by having conversations in public. So our students developed, along with his workshop, a question that they had, which was, who have borders separated you from? And they sort of distinguished that by friends, family, and community, and went to the farmers market and the flea market to take that data and have conversations with our community members about that question. The other component of this is the detention data project, which is information from ICE that was acquired via the Freedom of Information Act, and looks at ICE detentions in McLennan County only during October 2023 to October 2025. And that data is present in the piece as well. So our students made that selection to have both of those pieces together and have them dialogue with each other.
How does that data get represented in a physical format that people can see?
So on the inside of the piece, there's three pieces, sort of a triptych, that relate to each other. And each of those pieces are representations of this Venn diagram. So it's almost like a 3D physicalization you can walk into of a Venn diagram. And the art students made decisions about color and arrangement based on their artistic impressions and their artistic impulses. And on the outside of the piece, we have a number of flowers that are related directly and proportionally to the detention data. The students in the fiber arts class chose a flower for each nationality represented in that data. There's 38 nationalities represented in that detention data.
That was one of the things that really surprised me when I saw it at the STEAM Center, that that's a lot of different kinds of flowers. And I had no idea that 38 different nationalities were represented in detention in our community.
Yeah, I think that really surprised the students as well. And that was a big part of their impulse to want to share this information. The sheer number, the 1,700 detentions over that period and the 38 different nationalities, really sort of struck them. And so they wanted to represent those with flowers from those nations that are important. And then those flowers are represented proportionally to the data itself.
And this is, it's maybe important to note, this is, and just to reiterate what you were saying, this is between 23 and 2025.
Correct.
So this is before detentions were ramped up more recently. So it's this is data that was already in our community.
That's correct.
Practices already in our community.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And this detention data project releases data every 6 months. So we had the data up until October 2025 when we were working on this project. They have since released the next 6 months, but we have not done a deep dive into that data. But it does go on a rolling 6 month basis.
That presumably lays the path for doing a second iteration, which might kind of show how things have changed over time, which would be fascinating to see. What kind of impact did this project have on the students and the professors that were involved?
The students themselves were very invested in this project. They were a little uncertain at the beginning because it is so unique and it's a really different type of project to embark on. But they were very invested in their portions. And one of our students worked with a sound design student from theater and created a data sonification. And so we also had students come from the graduate program of the computer science department who wanted to be involved, who had been affected personally by ICE, and wanted to have a say and have a conversation within this. So what was really interesting is that we started to get not just our students who are in our courses, but also other students who would come in and volunteer their time to be part of this project.
It's I know how busy those students are, and for them to volunteer time means they must have really cared about this.
That's absolutely right. And one of the things we wanted to do was make sure it was community-based. And so we also had making days available both on campus and also at Thirst Coffee House. And the people who own Thirst are fantastic and great members of the community who really are engaged in this level of discourse. And so we were able to have community members as well as students and faculty working on this project throughout the iteration.
Shout out to Thirst, because I know they've been involved in helping to facilitate so many community arts projects. That's fantastic. And I kind of wish I had been able to be at one of those workshops, because it sounds like it was really a fascinating but also a very engaging activity. And you can kind of see that in the finished product. So what have you seen? I mean, you just had the first opportunity for people to actually engage with this artwork in a public setting. What did you see, and what did you think you would see, and how did that kind of how did that mesh with what you actually saw and the kinds of conversations and questions people had?
I think I like to hold expectations pretty loosely.
You're in the theater. Maybe that's a good idea.
Yeah. So I hold those expectations loosely, but we knew what we wanted to offer and we knew what we wanted to say, and the way that we wanted to offer it back to the community. It really is an offering for our community. What I noticed during that unveiling was there are several people who were moved to tears in the process. And we also provided people with opportunities to engage in their own sort of fiber arts work. They could pick up a piece of fabric and embroider it, or they could work on a worksheet. And I noticed there were a lot of people who sat and listened to the music and observed the piece and would be engaged in these type of activities to sort of process their own feelings that they were having around these questions.
I think one of the things that really struck me was just how many of those squares on the inside represented the impact of detention and borders in our community, how many people felt like they had been directly impacted or had been directly impacted by borders separating them from loved ones. And that was, it's a high proportion. That data visualization is really powerful.
Yeah, I think all of us were very surprised when we were beginning this project. We weren't sure what to expect when we went out to the farmers market and flea market, but the data points were overwhelming in terms of the loss and the ways in which people expressed that. It gave people an opportunity to sort of note or mark that loss in a public forum. And for a lot of people, that felt really meaningful.
What happens next with this artwork? I believe it's headed to DC. I guess this is a twofold question. So one is, what happens to it next? And also, how can people engage with this project? So will there be more opportunities for people to see it or even host it in McLennan County?
Yes, that is exactly the intention, is that it is a gift back to our community. And we would like for this to continue to travel around McLennan County over the next year or so. It is going to Washington, D.C. next, and that is May 28th through 30th to the Understory Festival. And after that, if you are interested in hosting it, your church, your business, your organization, we would love to hear from you. And you can see more about the project and also sign up for more information about hosting at fiber-belonging.netify.app. And Netify is spelled N-E-T-I. FY.
Fantastic. So if people go onto that site, firstly, they can see the what we've been describing, and hopefully our word picture meshes with what they will actually see. But also people can engage with the project and even host it here in the community. I would really love to see this beautiful piece. And it's both beautiful and then also heart-wrenching. And it goes with this the musical piece as well, which is also really, it's very beautiful. And then you realize that different notes denote the different lengths of time that people have been in detention. It is a really great meditative piece, I think ideal for church scenarios, ideal for community center scenarios, anywhere where people want to have a conversation about what the real data looks like in our community. Sarah, thank you so much for joining me, and thank you so much for bringing this very thoughtful collaborative project. I also love the number of disciplines that were involved in this. You would not necessarily think of math and statistics being involved with theater arts and fiber arts and music. That is, it's powerful. And there's definitely an invitation there for anyone who is compelled by any one of those disciplines. Thank you for your work.
Thank you so much, Fiona.
What connects today's conversations is the idea that creativity gains layers of meaning as more people get involved. You can sign up to make your mark on the Brookview Hills mural at 1401 North 34th Street at Community Paint Day, the ribbon cutting, and the mural battle. You can go to the Creative Waco website to find those dates and times and to sign up to make your own mark. And you can go onto the website to discover more about the Belonging Project emerging from Baylor University's disciplines that were involved in the project. And you can even apply to host that artwork in a place of worship or a community space. Meanwhile, there is a whole world of arts, events, performances, exhibitions, and happenings this season. Check out Culturalist with a Y for the Creative Community Calendar, and Waco Buzz and Waco Insider for curated lists of activities. If you want to become part of the creative renaissance in our community, check out Creative Waco's Sparks program, which puts you on the front row of fun experiences alongside a group of amazing people who are passionate about supporting the cultural and creative life of our community. I'm Fiona Bond, and this has been Conversations with Creative Waco. Until next time, stay curious, stay creative, and be part of the incredible arts programming in our community by showing up and taking part.
Conversations with Creative Waco is a production of KWBU. Find this and other local productions in the Programs tab at kwbu.org.